Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So you think you're good at PUBG Mobile?
All the guys on the right, so he sees them.
You think you're good at PUBG Mobile?
Question. Oh, they're going to go same time. Great teamwork there from the Bushka.
You think you're good at PUBG Mobile?
Sure.
I bet.
Whatever you say.
Drop in.
Drop in.
Drop in.
The Chipotle Challenger Series.
Let's see what you've got.
Let's see what you got.
Let's see what you've got.
Well, hi there, everybody. Welcome to Slightly Something Else. My name is Jack Packard.
And I'm Yardsy Croshaw. If you were watching the premiere of Adventurer's Night this morning on YouTube, I can only hope you're not sick of hearing from us yet.
Once again, you find Yardsy and myself in boxes talking about games.
Blimey. Always in these boxes. When will we ever escape from these boxes?
Never. Never, never, never. We're in boxes within boxes because we have boxes and then the YouTube window is its own box.
Yes. I have a Black Mesa box prominently behind me.
Uh-oh. What? Ooh, that's a lovely box.
They never sold the game in a box. The developers just sent me this.
I think that's great.
This is what the box they would have sold it in had they ever sold it in a box.
Yeah, I think it's gorgeous. That's a gorgeous. Oh, look, it even has like the little screenshots on the back. Oh, that's so classic.
Yeah. Thanks, Black Mesa devs.
Anyway, is Jack low or muffled a bit for anyone else? I thought I had figured out my audio, but I guess we're going to find out.
Well, anyway, let's assume audio is fine and press on Boulder's Brass, because
yes. This
week's topic in Slightly Something Else is related to something you brought up in our private correspondence that I have to admit did intrigue me.
Okay.
When you pointed out that when we talk about emotional games, games that play on the emotions,
mm-hmm.
the ones that are usually presented as the epitomes of such things only ever deal with one emotion, that being sadness and grief.
Absolutely. This came up over the weekend. I was chatting with some people who aren't necessarily video game people. And, you know, I had to take the position of defending video games as art in general. I mean, it was a lovely conversation. It was, and you know, we were all, you know, happily debating art and whatnot. And I went to the standard, these are the games that are really art. Your Shadow of Colossus, your Dark Souls, your Spiritfarer, as anyone who just watched the Spiritfarer documentary knows, is a lovely game dealing with emotions. All of these games, though, deal with sadness, sorrow, and grief, right?
Well, the easy explanation for that is that when we seek out emotional catharsis, we seek the emotions that give us the strongest response, the strongest physical response. Those are the ones we find most satisfying. So that will usually mean something funny that makes us laugh, something scary that makes us jump, or something sad that makes us cry. We seek out these strong physical emotional responses to explore the human space, I suppose, the human emotional world.
Absolutely, but I feel like this is it's the same in a lot of mediums, which is like
media. Media is plural of medium.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well then,
look up your Latin, asshole.
That was uncalled for. then it's similar across all media, which is generally speaking the art house picture, the art house pictures, the art house books, the art house everything usually deal with sadness. There's very few exploration of joy or anger or really any other strong emotion. It's most 99% of it is all sadness.
Well, there are games that make you angry. There are games that make you frustrated. I don't know if that's the same thing.
What I'm looking for here is an exploration of an emotion. That's my big ask here is, are there video games that explore an emotional state like Dark Souls explores grief?
Well, let's think about this. Mm. You mentioned Spiritfarer. Everyone watched the documentary. It's good. I mentioned it. And the devs say they like my review, and I was chuffed. Spiritfarer, of course, centralizes the concept of grief. I'd hesitate to call it a sad game, though. I think there's a joyous quality to it.
Hmm.
Well, maybe not so much joyous as comfortable. It's about exploring grief from a comfortable position. So there's a lot of happiness to it. There's a lot of joy in the game. There's a lot of... what's the right words? It's a very social game where you experience the joy of hanging out with other people and getting to know them. And then, of course, yes, you feel sad because they die, but you feel that sad in juxtaposition to the rest of the experience. It wouldn't work if they didn't spend a whole, like most of that game, getting to know these characters before you bump them off.
Ooh, okay. I like that. It's
sadness in that game is just half the experience. Mm-hmm. It's the payoff of the experience. So I would argue Spiritfarer explores a spectrum.
Ooh, all right. I like that. I think it weighs a little more towards the end of grief, just because that's also kind of the central plot point of Spiritfarer.
Well, quite.
You know, like, I accept that it is about the full spectrum. Like, it's really about the grieving process, which is, you know, celebrating the life and the times that you had, but also letting go, that whole thing, which is a big mixed bag of emotions. Agreed.
A couple of titles you mentioned on there. Someone's asking if there's a game about guilt. I think Silent Hill 2 would be a classic example.
There's a big
presence of sadness and grief in that game, but I'd say the tentpole emotion in that game is guilt.
And I know very little about Silent Hill 2 as I have not played it, but I know listening to you talk about it, that's from what I remember you saying, is that's one of the reasons why the sexy nurses were so intriguing in that game, is because it has to do with guilt of your wife, ex-wife?
The sexiness is an expression of sexual frustration, because the main character in that game is dealing with like the loss of his wife, who was ill for a while, and because she was ill, he couldn't get his ugly little rocks off.
Sure.
And obviously he feels massive guilt for having felt sexually frustrated, as you would.
Yes.
So I suppose thinking about it, at its heart, it's a game about grief, and the guilt and the sexual frustration and the sadness is all like coming off of that, like tree branches, thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what else? Emotional games. One big one that came to my mind was Undertale, of course.
Ooh, okay. I'm trying to... you know what? Like, it's been long enough since I've played Undertale that I can't anchor myself to the emotional core of it.
Undertale explores a range of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I think friendship is a big part of it.
Okay.
And I think at the very end, it's a game about redemption. At the end of the good ending, at any rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was well up a bit at the bit in the good ending where you sort of like restore the humanity of the big villain.
Sure, sure.
And if you like, once you get into their story, that there's a lot of sadness there, but it's sort of like... That moment is sort of a relief from sadness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joyous moment.
Hmm.
Everyone feels better now.
Well, and I suppose in thinking of my analogs in film is like, you know, films that explore joy, there is that also mixed bags. Like, you know, one of my personal favorite schmaltziest movies of all time is Mr. Holland's Opus, which is, you know, all about, you know, kind of finding the joy in something that you didn't think he would find joy in. And there is a lot of sadness in there. There's a lot of frustration. And so a lot of, you know, Undertale has this mixed bag of the spectrum of emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. And explores quite a few emotions, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
All the characters are sort of dealing with their own shit. It's all against the background of this sort of atmosphere of like anticipation, I suppose. And hope. Yes,
that's hope. That was bouncing off of hope. That was something on my list as far as games that explore hope, optimism, and joy, which is Wander Song.
I don't think I've played that.
And I've only played a little bit of it. I haven't finished it, though I very much want to after doing a little research into this and remembering how much fun I had playing it. It's a game that starts off very, very basic as far as the hero's journey is concerned. You play as, you know, this singing bard who's going to use their ever-present optimism to save the world, only to have your preconceived notions about what you need to do kind of change throughout the game. And so then it's an exploration of like what you as the hero really want to do, and whether it's optimism or cynicism, pessimism that saves the day, like what your character really wants and where that optimism comes from. So it's a very hopeful, joyous game throughout, and it does a really good job of exploring like kind of blind hope versus like inner hope, if that makes any sense.
Well, just as Spiritfarer is about sadness but has a lot of things to like mirror the sadness to sort of enhance the effect of the sadness, a lot of games that are about exploring one emotion also by design explore the opposite emotion, because the two can't exist without each other, I suppose. You can only really feel like the weight and impact of a hopeful experience if there's a strong presence of despair as well. People keep bringing up God of War as a game that expresses that explores anger, which is a central theme of the game. It's how everything kicks off in that game. The first God of War, I mean, not the PS4 one.
Yeah, I guess that's the question. My question would be whether God of War explores anger or if it just is angry.
I think if you take God of War by itself and ignore all of its sequels,
yeah,
God of War, I think, is a pretty neatly tied up arc about someone dealing with anger.
Okay, explain yourself.
Because, well, Kratos starts off as a very, very angry man.
Yeah.
And he gets so angry one day that he kills his own family, spoiler alert. And then, like, that makes him even angrier, and he goes after the person who made him do that, Ares, and uses but throughout the course of the game, he sort of gains a sort of awareness of that anger has sort of hollowed him out, that anger has turned him into a monster. And once he has gotten his revenge, I mean, the dude literally attempts suicide at the end of the game because he's gotten his revenge and there's literally nothing else for him in his existence.
Okay, all right, I can be with you here.
As I say, you really need to disregard every other God of War game to explore this take on God of War. But yeah, Kratos has an arc. He starts off angry and in the end he gives in to despair. Only for that even that despair is ripped away from him when he's like, has the position of the God of War foisted upon him. It's very tragic, really, when you think about it.
I'm completely down with this interpretation. I'm trying to think, you know, I know God of War 4, God of War PS4, Dad of Boy, if you will, if we could separate the franchises. I know a lot of people, you know, turn to that as very good story-wise, and I do think they play well mechanically with a few things. I don't know. I'm trying to go through it very quick in my head to see if that explores any sort of guilt or fatherly love.
Sorry, Jack, why are your fingernails painted?
It's a very long story. We had quite
I'm sorry to digress, but I suddenly wondered, and people watching are probably wondering as well.
Probably, and I was trying to keep them kind of under camera here, but I do talk with my hands. The short version of the story is we had quite a gathering over the weekend. Part of the reason that I'm thinking about sorrow and joy and emotions in game, it was a funeral weekend for me. And so we had a bit of a wake here. There was fingernail paint. It was a whole big thing. And then my wife left out of town and took her nail polish remover with her. So
you're stuck with it.
So I'm stuck with it for now. I'm going to the store later to get some more, but I don't really leave the house. So, you know, it hasn't very bothered me. And yes, it's a gorgeous shade, by the way. Just bright red.
You were transitioning your circus act from the clown to the half man, half woman.
Just per, you know, like Victor Victoria, absolutely.
Yeah,
I could use a wig, but
always room for one.
Always room for a wig, and yeah, it's a great color. Really brings out my veins.
But anyway, no, I struggle to think of an emotional theme in God of War 4.
Right,
I struggle to think of an emotional theme in most AAA games because they're all just so broad.
Right. Well, and it kind of ends, God of War, Dad of Boy ends on the same note that it begins with, which is kind of Kratos's silent love for his kid, which I suppose he always had, and nothing moved from beginning to end of Dad of Boy, you know?
I suppose you could say it's about being emotionally unavailable.
Right. But I feel like he's similarly emotionally unavailable at the end of the game, so...
Right,
that doesn't really do anything. I guess, like, their relationship strengthens in that Atreus also gets very good at murdering people. So... Yeah.
They start to see eye to eye. They bond over murder.
Yeah. And so it's sins of the father, I guess. But even then, I don't think that's a good emotional core to be on.
Okay. Let's think about some other emotions.
So, right. Well, and I was thinking a little bit of games like, I don't know if it does a good job of exploring these themes, but there are games kind of like your Pokemon, your Stardew Valley, or your Animal Crossing that have big themes of relationships or friendship or love, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think in virtually every JRPG you find, there's a theme of we are stronger because we are together and are friends.
Exactly.
Every JRPG ends with using the power of friendship to kill God. In fact, there's multiple ones I can think of that literally end with the same sequence where it does a sort of montage of all the characters you've met, and it shows them sending prayers to you. So that you can finally come bounce back in your moment of adversity against the big boss.
Exactly.
I think there's a sequence of that. That happens in Earthbound. That happens in Paper Mario 2. Mm-hmm. It happens at the end of pretty much every Persona game. Mm-hmm. I think I'm prepared to say every JRPG I've gotten around to finishing has ended with something like that.
But I'm also really okay with that because that is like a very nice, wholesome, positive message that also usually contrasts with, like, you know, oh, this ultimate evil is destroying the world for whatever reason, right?
I suppose it makes sense for a game about exploring the world to sort of look back on the journey by having a little montage of characters.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very nice. I know that it's something I cite very often, but that was one of my favorite bits from Horizon Zero Dawn, is if you do all the side missions at the end fight with the big baddie, they all come and help you out because, teamwork makes the dream work.
I saw a comment mentioning Hades, and I think Hades might be a game that expresses the emotion of frustration.
Ooh, and I have not played Hades, so elaborate on that. Go ahead.
Rather than just, you know, being a frustrating game. Hades is a game where you play as the son of Hades, who's like going through a teenage moody phase, mm-hmm. and wants to like escape from Hades. And it's a roguelite, so every time you die, you teleport back to the start of Hades. And it's really well done story-wise, because every time you go back to the center of Hades, you know, all the characters are there. Hades himself is there saying, playing. Well, you fucked that up, didn't you, stupid kid? And it really captures the frustration of being a teenager and being like not feeling like you're reaching your full potential, or that you're allowed to come out from under your parents.
Okay.
I mean, Hades is the end boss.
Right.
And, you beat him, but that's not even the end of the story. It's like, you beat him, you get to the surface world, something else happens that I won't spoil. Mm-hmm. You end up back in Hades, and Hades is like, well, I hope we're pleased with ourselves. And then you just do that, you do it again. So I go through Hades, defeat Hades again, go back to the surface world again, back to the start of Hades again. Yeah. And it's all, everyone's just trapped in a cycle, I suppose.
I really love that. I think frustration is an emotion that does not get talked about a lot. And so that sounds like it's incorporating this gameplay mechanic, this roguelite mechanic that we all know, into its storytelling, which that sounds brilliant.
Hmm.
I know it's on my list. I'm waiting for like a physical version to come to the Switch so I can play it on the Switch.
All right. Time to test my knowledge of gaming history and trivia. I want you to nominate an emotion, and I will think of a game that in some way explores it.
Oh, fuck. See, and this is where it gets really hard, because it's hard to think of like other emotions, right? But what I am looking for here is I'm looking for the inside out of video games. I'm looking for a video game that explores joy.
Joy,
like happiness in general, what happiness's role is, how it contrasts with the other emotions.
Well, Spiritfarer is a good one, as I said. Joyousness.
Yes.
There's a bit of that in... What about one of the Katamari games?
Ooh.
You ever played a Katamari game?
I have my PlayStation 2 disc of Katamari Damacy right there on my shelf, including the Japan-only soundtrack, my friend. Yes.
I mean, those are games are about just this joyous experience, this joyous carefree experience of just rolling up the entire world as it screams and tells you to stop.
Interesting.
You can sort of experience joy from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very joyous, very colorful, very upbeat.
Yeah,
very happy music. You could sort of argue that it explores like hedonism, even, because the whole plot of the first game is that the king of all cosmos got massively drunk and smashed up the whole cosmos.
Uh-huh.
So you have to create new stars by rolling up random bullshit.
Of course.
So the hedonism is a strong theme in the game.
I suppose there could be a tying in as far as like happiness and accepting the stuff around you as more than stuff.
Well, I mean, any games that feel joyous to play, I suppose, but if you talk about games that explore the experience,
right?
I think we're going to go back to a lot of games that are about exploring sadness, because as I say, there's a contrast.
Yeah.
Donald Nabaty mentions Flower
The
chat.
Mm-hmm.
Flower is a good game that has this very sort of joyous sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Journey as well, something similar.
Okay.
But those joyous sequences always come out of like moments of maximum despair for the contrast.
I might, and I know like this is the old staple, this is the old standby, and so I've been trying not to delve into this, but something akin to Stardew Valley, where there is no timer. We can use Minecraft as an example as well. You know, there is no timer, there is no death state. At least in creative mode in Minecraft, but the exploring the joy, as in as far as you get to do what you want, your sandbox experience, go at your own pace and do what you want, and finding the joy within the everyday mundane. Stardew Valley is the Mr. Holland's opus of video games.
That's a good line. There's the trailer line.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And I don't know. I always think of joy as a very sort of enriching experience, something that like fills your soul.
Right, but right.
Stardew Valley, I think of more as a sort of happy state of comfort.
This is potato, potato, you know, joy, happy, comfort.
Just, you know, sitting on your rocking chair on the porch on a nice spring afternoon where it's not too hot and it's not too cold.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a nice tall drink in your hand. You're watching the kids play on the lawn with the dog.
What is these things you're saying if not joy? What?
I guess I've never been well acquainted with joy in my life.
Well, this is my part of my bigger, if we're going to zoom out a little bit, part of my bigger issue with this is I think that talking about grief and talking about sadness is also paradoxically easier. It's easier to be negative.
Well, it's a universal experience, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
But you want to talk about like slightly more complex emotions.
I want to challenge us to explore what makes us happy. And I feel like that is not done enough because it's so much easier to point out something that makes us sad. You know, like death, that makes everybody sad. And so I feel like the art house game using despair as a backdrop or grief is almost a cop out.
You know, I agree. I've always felt that there's something very lazy. Something feels very lazy about that sort of game.
Mm-hmm.
I've often thrown up like those comedy bingo cards for that sort of game.
Yes.
Yes, it's a game about a small child in a scary world. And yes, there's sad piano music in the background. And yes, there'll probably be a theme of surrounding grief. There'll probably be a dark forest at some point. The enemy will probably be the darkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just fight smoke monsters that represent, I don't know, giving in to despair or something.
Exactly. And so, like, that's... When I started to research this, it's like, oh, you know, there's plenty of games that like just make people happy from playing them. Like playing Dark Souls 3 makes me happy, but it's not necessarily exploring happiness, you know, like that sort of thing.
I'll tell you a game I wanted to bring up that I mentioned to you before the record is a recent game that I've been doing some playing of and thinking about called Cruelty Squad. And I'm sure a lot of people will know of it. It's like got 2,000 reviews on Steam and an overwhelmingly positive rating. It's definitely struck a chord with a certain sector of the internet.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at the game, well, it looks like absolute trash. It looks like it was made as a joke. It looks like a troll game. It's the colors all clash. The text is barely readable. The interface is appalling.
Oh, I'm looking at a little gameplay footage right now. Yeah, it looks like a Nintendo 64 game.
And when you first play it, that's how you feel. You'll think, why the hell is everyone saying this is so great?
Right.
And then you'll probably give up.
Mm-hmm.
And then something, you won't know what, but it will make you go back.
Okay.
And I went back to explore it further and play through it. And I genuinely think this is a game that expresses something that no other game does. It's violent and it's a game about assassinating targets, but it feels like a game that just doesn't care. It is a game, the emotion that it embodies for me is ennui.
Oh.
It's a game where you kill things and nothing around you really cares. Nothing is really characterized. You're just sent after targets and you kill them.
Mm-hmm.
The world is sort of dystopian, suburban hell seen through a filter of massive drugs.
Uh-huh.
And it just feels like, I've been writing a review of it and it's like, and I came up with the line, it's like having a bad acid trip while already zoned out on weed. So you're just zoned out and staring and not and unwilling to do anything to stop it as reality collapses around you.
All right. That's new.
And then you start to realize the very fact that it looks like shit is itself an expression of ennui. It just seems like it just completely has stopped caring.
Sure. And so this kind of like nihilistic, you know, everything is nothing, I feel nothing kind of vibe.
Exactly. It's nihilistic in every sense.
Ooh.
Makes you think of Killer 7, mm-hmm. but clinically depressed. Like it couldn't even be bothered to lift in a hand, do the more energetic parts of Killer 7.
That is a difficult emotion to get across, especially in an interactive medium like video games. That's very interesting.
It reminds me of troll mods for first person shooters.
Sure.
And this is like something that's always interested me. Mm-hmm. Like those mods they used to, like someone made for Half-Life, where all the characters are just replaced with memes.
Yeah.
And all the, like, voice lines are replaced with like cussing with terrible mic quality, and all the textures are replaced with memes or like pornography.
Right. Like original Doom, but every single texture is Tim Allen's face, and every time you shoot the gun, it's Tim Allen going, which is a real mod.
Yeah. I can believe it. There's a lot of shit like that. There was a thing for Half-Life called Crack Life, which was like the epitome of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I just think this is a really interesting form of expression. It's sort of like graffiti, but video games. It's a expression of nihilistic frustration by, you know, an unheard voice,
mm-hmm.
that's sort of on the edge of what society considers acceptable. I think that's a really interesting form of expression.
Mm-hmm.
It expresses things you don't see expressed anywhere else, because by necessity everything else goes through the system.
Absolutely. So it's a tapping into kind of that outsider art perspective where they don't know they don't follow through with the constructs, and so it's just raw emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. And I often find them really funny, and I'm not sure why. Mm. Just like firing a gun and hearing the wrong noise, that just makes me laugh.
I think that's great. I think that's absolutely beautiful. I see in the chat someone is saying, I wonder if there's any value to exploring these negative emotions. I feel like it's hard to relate unless you've been there, in which case it's not really needed.
Why do you explore any emotion through art? It's about exploring the human experience. Absolutely. Pain and pleasure, indivisible.
That's literally all art is an expression of a thought or an idea through a given media. And so, I suppose it doesn't necessarily matter if you've ever been sad. Although, I mean, come on, I'd like to think we've all been sad at one point.
You gotta hope so. If you've never been sad in your whole life, most people would probably think you'd had a little bit very empty existence.
Absolutely. And so... And I guess that's really like I think this has been a wonderful discussion as far as these games that do delve into different emotions, and I love the fact that I like outsider art. I always play through like the tiny little horror games that tend to be, you know, a little bit rough around the edges, but definitely have a very strong idea.
A lot of those have that very same troll game sort of vibe.
Yes. Where there's something not quite right about it, but they are going hard. They're wearing their emotions on their sleeve, and I always enjoy that.
Yes. In many ways, the most pure experience in an emotional art form.
Emotionally pure, absolutely. Technically, you know, needs a little refinement.
Well, some might argue that, you know, being fully technically skilled might get in the way of that expression.
That's why a lot of
this was just mods on existing games.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to just replace a few textures and sound effects for a laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Shall we go to Super Chats?
Sure, yeah, and I guess just
about time we did that.
My final button here is, yeah, something in general I would like more is games, you know, kind of like that Wander song that delve into the positive aspects of our emotions and make us think more about that, because I think sadness is easy.
Do me a favor, have a go at Cruelty Squad and stick with it, because I guarantee at first you won't get what the hell is the appeal.
Yeah. All
but
right.
If you stick with it, maybe like look up a few things, because there's some like hidden things in there.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, see what sort of emotions you feel about it.
I have
after
a tab open.
Spend some time with it. Okay.
I have a tab open. I will play it. All right.
I'd be interested to hear your views.
Perhaps we'll talk about it next time.
All right. Super chat time. Get your super chats in now, everyone.
Let's talk about stuff that you want to talk about now.
Okay. Donald Navity gives $5 to say, Asura's Wrath deals with anger. It might not make you feel angry, but it's there.
Asura's Wrath.
Yeah, I know of it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just that because the main character is very, very angry all the time? I don't know. I don't think I've like seen through the whole game.
Well, let me click on it so I can. Oh, I see. Well, yeah. The idea here is not like games that display an emotion. It's games that explore an emotion, and I think, as Yahtzee was saying, as far as the story of the first God of War is concerned, like that deals with the repercussions of Kratos's uncontrolled anger, right? And so that's an exploration of anger. Is what's the consequences of it? Like, if your character is just angry and they start the game angry and they end the game angry, it's like, oh, that's not necessarily an exploration. What are the consequences of your actions?
There's a lot of games where characters are just unspecifically angry the whole time.
Exactly. Like,
Gears of War springs to mind. The second Prince of Persia Sands of Time game.
Scowl is not an emotion, Yahtzee.
No.
Yeah.
Galacta Watkins gives £10. Great name, by the way. To say, hey guys, longtime fan of your work, Yahtzee, still listen to the Drownouts. I feel emotional games have become a woke Oscar game category. Your thoughts on if this can be avoided in the current era? Well, this is what we were saying, of course, that a lot of these games that usually end up winning the game awards for most emotional game, the ones that, you know, go all in on sadness and grief, often it feels easy.
Yeah, sadness and grief are cheap.
Yeah, just all you have to do is, like, kill someone sitting next to you, and bam, all the grief you need.
Right, well, and I don't want that to sound overtly glib, because dealing with grief is an emotionally tolling experience, and so, like, there's nothing inherently wrong with dealing with grief. I just feel like it's done so often, and so often it's done poorly.
I think the way you avoid it is that you try to avoid making a broad experience. I mean, these games about sadness are made to be broad explorations of sadness that everyone could feel. But I think what would make a more interesting game if you explore something a lot more personal to you, like Celeste explores anxiety from the perspective of an anxious person, and because that's not quite as universal, it's much more interesting take on its subject.
I like that.
Narrow it a bit down to your own personal experience. Make the game that, you know, expresses your own feelings. That's how you avoid things feeling a bit bland.
Right. Don't just make a small child in a big scary world.
Yeah.
I think that was one of my favorite bits from the Spiritfarer documentary is...
Yeah, I was about to bring up, yeah.
Is the all of the developers talking about like their own personal experiences with, you know, deaths in the family and how they brought that into the characters to make it a personal game.
I think they were saying all the characters are based on someone the writer knew in real life.
Right. Like little bits of people they knew made it into their characters. And that shows through. And I think that some games that just have a small child in a big scary world, it doesn't feel personal.
if that makes any sense.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
UMath DC gives 10 Bob Bees.
Ooh.
Who says, a few bobs for a coffee for the Dungeon Master. I will thank you as soon as we figured out what bobs are.
How many Starbucks can it get me? Because we need...
Bob currency.
I assumed it was a British thing. That is a new one for.
Oh, it's a Bolivian Boliviano.
Oh, okay.
The official currency of Bolivia is the Boliviano.
Absolutely. As your dungeon master, I will take that as I need it. As we've now decided that episode zero, which was our test episode for the Dungeons and Dragons show, is now canon. So I have to completely rewrite the rest of my
ideas. Wasn't the plan. It wasn't the plan, was it? But now we're going to have to deal with the aftermath of the zombie apocalypse that we caused.
Which I love. I think that's hilarious. You know why? Because that's exploring your repercussions. That's exploring the consequences of your actions.
Yes, we explore the emotion of guilt or lack of same.
I'll take it.
Okay. Yeah, Google got confused there because a bob is also an old word for a shilling in old English money.
Right. Well, anytime you say like bits and bob, that's a British thing.
You know, have you ever heard how, like, old British currency used to work?
Mm-mm.
If you watch, like, really old episodes of Monty Python, they talk about units, like, the price of something being £6, 4, and 12.
Okay.
Because you had pounds, and then you had shillings, and then you had pence. And a pound was something like 240 pence, and a shilling was, like, 5 pence. And then there was guineas, and then there was... It was all a big mess. So the currency got decimalized at some point during Monty Python's run. So in later episodes, they started using proper money. But it's an interesting insight into how reluctant the British establishment can be to change something that feels like it came out straight out of medieval times.
that's always the problem, is like the evolving economy, right? I know we're dealing with that in America still today about the penny. We have cents and we have this penny, which costs more to produce than a penny is worth.
Australia ditched the penny and the tuppence bit,
yeah,
and the tuppenny bit. Now, the smallest unit currency is 5 cents, and if your transaction doesn't come to something divisible by 5 cents, it just gets rounded.
Boop, round up, round down, right? Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it works fine.
And no one will care, but we still don't do anything about it. It's crazy.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense in American politics.
Next super chat.
Okay, moving hastily on. Quetzalcoatl Ehecatl gives, oh, for God's sakes, 20 PLNs.
We know that one.
Do we?
PLNs is a...
It's a Polish zloty.
Oh, yeah. I think we knew that.
Who says, Jack, you should get into drag with Trixie Mattel. I don't understand that reference.
I don't know who Trixie Mattel is, but if my fingernails are any indication, I would be pretty.
No hair, no facial hair. You could certainly drag up with ease.
Right? Like wigs, like a little double-sided tape that'll stick right there. Very, very pretty.
I mean, you've done clowning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a logical step.
Right? I just don't know if I'd be able to walk in heels. I'm not that coordinated. So hopefully if I can do it without the heels, then we're talking.
How's your imitation lady voice?
I'm sure I could, you know, if I could go Southern Belle, we could go real high.
This is stirring odd feelings in me.
Add Southern Belle character to D&D campaign. Okay, great.
Okay, next super chat from someone whose name is in Cyrillic Russian that I don't know how to read,
mm-hmm,
gives 300 rubles, to say, good evening, seeing as you and Jack are now pals, and you currently live in America, would Yahtzee consider coming to RLM headquarters as a guest star? Just imagine best of the worst Uwe Boll movies. Now we've been over this.
Okay, ready for the short version?
Yeah.
I don't make decisions on who comes on Best of the Worst. I don't even make decisions on when I come on Best of the Worst. Two, Yahtzee's not necessarily a movie guy, so he feels like his conversations would be incredibly lacking. Three, Yahtzee would be so starstruck by being in the same room as me, personally, no one else, that he wouldn't be able to say anything.
There you go.
Great.
Also, just because we both live in America doesn't count for much. Because, you know... Me living in California and Jack living in Wisconsin is the equivalent of me being in Britain and Jack being in Russia.
Very, like...
Just in terms of distance.
It's like a five-hour airplane ride. Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the big problems in America is that it's so, like, it's so large and there's so much empty space between the communities. There's no real sense of togetherness.
That's true. Like even our states are ridiculously big. Like, you know, me just being on the south side of Wisconsin, like the north end of Wisconsin is an incredible distance away.
I mean, there are some parts of the U.S. that feel like parts of the third world at this point. Mm. But I'm in California, which is probably still one of the more progressive places you can live in the world right now.
Very possibly. Depending on the area of California, I'm sure.
Northern California. Just need to refresh the page. Hang on.
Absolutely. Refresh away. Hold on. I'm going to mute myself. Give me one moment.
Okay. Oh, shit. Damn it. I can't carry this by myself. How are we all doing, everyone? Bloke goes to the lawyer and says, how much do you charge? And the lawyer says, $5,000 for three questions. And the bloke goes, isn't that a bit exorbitant? And the lawyer goes, yes, what's your third question? Are you back yet?
I did it. I came back.
Oh, I was about to revert to bringing toffee out.
Oh, well, you did it anyway, so that's great. Okay, I'm back. What's our next super chat?
Next super chat comes from that guy you know, who gives $5 to say, Yahtzee, have you played any of the Disgaea games, and are you going to review Disgaea 6? No and no. Thanks for the money, that guy you know.
Ching. Easy peasy.
James Matchett gives $5 to say, as someone who has strongly dealt with depression, Disco Elysium really struck a chord with me. What game really struck an emotional chord with you? Well, my answer would probably be Cruelty Squad from most recent games. As I said, once I discovered it was an expression of bleakness, ennui, and existential horror. Because, you know... That's life.
Or were they asking you what your favorite part of Disco Elysium is?
No, they were asking what game particularly struck a chord with you.
Oh.
That you might not necessarily have struck a chord with everyone.
Oh, sure. That might not have necessarily struck a chord with everyone. That, you know, I... That's an interesting question. I don't know if I can think of my hipster answer. My very easy answer is the first time playing through Shadow of the Colossus. I remember this shouldn't be a spoiler as it's an old game, but you know, you get to the end and you get to the mandatory get, you know, sucked up by the darkness ending, right? Mm. And at that moment in Shadow of the Colossus, you can attempt to run away, and actually you can run away for as long as you want. You can never leave, but you can keep rolling and trying to run, and you can do a very good job of not getting gobbled up. It's completely futile.
But that sequence, I kept running for way longer than I probably should have, even way after I realized that running away was pointless, because I was just very emotionally invested. And so that sequence at the end in particular hit me very hard.
Hmm. And of course, Disco Elysium itself is another game that explores emotion in a very unconventional way.
Hmm.
What do you think would be the core emotion in that game?
Disco Elysium? I haven't played it.
It's hard to say. It's a game about, you know, experiencing a complete loss of self and rebuilding yourself from the ground up.
Ooh, okay. So then the emotional core of that would be, would that be talking about like delving into ego, delving into self, self pride?
I guess it's not so much emotional, is it? More sort of existential.
Hmm.
It explores identity.
Like, is that maybe like a tangential, like a side that's brushed up against emotions, is like self-worth, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess. Someone mentioned self-loathing in the chat.
Yeah.
Right then. Mixpad gives $5 to ask, do you think that a game that explores emotions is more powerful than games like Half-Life, where it's up to the player to consider their own emotions? Weird example there, but yeah, if a game specifically explores something, like, as I say, your Celeste, that comes from a very personal sort of place, but it feels like, then yeah, that's more powerful because it's like a conversation with the author, isn't it? And the author's singular emotions and how you could relate to them.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's not necessarily an emotional core to Skyrim, even if you're playing as a character, right? Mm. You just kind of, you go on your adventure. There's not necessarily anything that you discover about yourself in a game like that.
Well, no, because you're a blank slate, aren't you?
Right. So that's kind of the difference between like AAA and arty farty that we're dealing with here, which is you know, a character arc, a story arc, an emotional arc over a story arc, is I guess.
Yeah. Shadow Rundus gives $5 to ask: is aroused an emotion? Bunch of games trying to do that on Steam these days. Well, I suppose we could add it to my list of emotions that provoke physical reactions. So that was laughter, fear, sadness, and horn. Getting the horn on. Which, you know, we all need in certain times in our lives. A game that gives us the horn, or possibly just a video that gives us the horn. So we can express our emotions in a nice, enclosed, dark room, hopefully into a tissue.
So, but here's the real question, Yats. Is there a game that explores the horn or just gives you the horn? Like we talked about with God of War and exploring anger versus just is anger.
I guess people don't really want to explore the horn. I suppose you could say Doki Doki Literature Club sort of leads you along for a while and then kicks you in the balls.
Like, is there a game about crafting the horn and that might, you know, have a different experience?
Oh, some people mentioned Catherine, which might be an example. That's a game about someone being brought down by their horniness.
Ooh, okay.
In many ways. And trying to come to terms with their own horn. In fact, the main character literally has horns in a sort of direct visual metaphor.
Very nice. I like it.
Some people mentioning Leisure Suit Larry. Ooh, I said leisure there. I'm becoming acclimatized to the US.
Oh, no more leisure for you.
Leisure Suit Larry. I always thought Leisure Suit Larry scanned better. Leisure Suit Larry.
I've only known it as leisure, so I cannot be with you there. Leisure Suit Larry. I think the hard E has a better flow. Leisure Suit Larry. Leisure Suit Larry is just all flat. Leisure Suit Larry.
I think Leisure Suit Larry would, you could work it better into iambic pentameter. The Leisure Suit Larry.
Oh, you've been called a yank. You've been called a yank, or maybe they're still talking about horn games. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Give it a yank. See what comes out. Rajan Singh gives 100 somethings. Sek Krona says here. Just wanted to say thanks for the great podcast and review over the years. Also, interestingly, Celeste is, according to the developer, a trans narrative, but still holds up without knowing that. Well, I guess it does, because I didn't know that.
There you go.
There you go.
You know, in hindsight, as was the Matrix.
Yeah, now you mention it.
Like, way more obvious in hindsight now. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's almost like trans experience isn't necessarily only something you can experience if you're trans.
Mm, exactly.
It's almost like there's a universality to the core emotions.
Ooh, interesting. Very interesting. Almost like they're expressing themselves and we can all take a little bit of it and learn a little bit about empathy.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, it's almost like, you know, transsexuals are fucking human beings.
What?
Anyway. Missed almost this one there. Mm. Hamilton Lucas Nsimbi gives 50 czars to ask, how does one write comedy? What make writing fun? Well, if you're asking how to write jokes, well, the starting point is you say something that causes your audience to make an assumption, and then you say another thing that proves their assumption false. That's the work-a-day model.
Juxtaposition.
That's the start.
That's it.
Like when you say, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, especially if thrown with enough force. See, you made an assumption. You thought I was talking about eating apples. No, I turned it around. It turns out I was talking about throwing them.
But you were talking about violence. That's not healthy. Ah, yes. Oh, that's you've subverted my expectations.
One morning, I woke up in a complete mess. There was vomit all down my front. Mm-hmm. I got up, stumbled naked down the hall, and then I got off the bus. See, you thought I was at home. You thought I was in my bedroom going to the bathroom. I was on a bus the whole time.
But like when I wake up, it's in my bed. So that's definitely where I thought you were going with that.
Your expectations were confounded, and from thence the humor arose.
I like the dry explanation. It's very funny. right. And by the way, what makes writing fun? If you don't find writing fun, it's very possible you don't like writing.
Yeah.
So
if you want to learn how to write comedy, just read a whole lot of comedy and absorb it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the start.
Most people find writing fun first and then keep writing. And so like, I don't know if there's any trick to making writing more fun.
No.
Sorry to say.
Maybe just find the thing you do find fun and do that.
Oh, boom.
You might even be able to monetize it.
Hey.
You can monetize everything else in this grim capitalistic future.
Welcome to daily hobby monetization. You don't get free time anymore. Everything's monetized.
If not, just make weird troll mods for Half-Life.
I'm down with that,
and
too.
And replace all the textures with porn. Abdul Rahman Alawadi gives $5 to say, are there any games that instead of exploring a specific emotion, it lets you interpret the themes? Something abstract and surreal, like a Lynch movie. Well, sure, there's plenty of abstract and surreal games in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Gris for some reason.
Gris.
However you say it. That's certainly highly interpretive.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. And this makes me lose a lot of my film nerd cred. While I respect David Lynch as a filmmaker, he's not necessarily my style, because I do like it when an artist expresses a specific emotion or theme. And so not necessarily my cup of tea when they leave it up to interpretation, because that also is the work of a lazy writer. Like, oh, it's your own interpretation. What happened? Yeah.
Well, that was the last super chat.
Well, then.
So well, I guess we'll wrap this up.
I hate to leave it on the down note.
I was sort of expecting another one to come in while we were reading it, but I guess not.
Well,
thanks for all the super chats we did get.
Absolutely.
As always, it helps support the site. It helps us keep doing the things we love. I was Yahtzee Croshaw.
And I was Jack Packard. Thanks Remember for to, watching or listening.
Yes. What you're listening, remember to watch the premiere for our D&D series, Adventure is Nigh. That's on YouTube now.
That's right.
We have got a lot of good feedback from that. Everyone seems to enjoy the adventure of us pissing about with an unfeasibly strong cat.
She's so strong.
Yeah, real breakout character there, I think.
Everyone loves the cat, which really we should not be surprised. We shouldn't be surprised by that. So, no, that's great. Thanks, everyone. Our Twitter handles are below our faces. I'm at Harlack.
I'm at Yahtzee Croshaw. I'll be back tomorrow with Zero Punctuation and the post-CP stream. In the meantime, watch that Spiritfarer documentary. It's really good.
It's very good. And also play Spiritfarer if you haven't. It's very good.
Yeah, let's start with that.
Oh, there you go.
Start with playing Spiritfarer and then watch the documentary.
You know, sometimes like you'll watch a documentary and think to yourself, oh, I should really play this game.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you watch a movie, the first thing you do is go and read the IMDb trivia. That would lose something if you did it the other way around.
Yeah, I could see that. All right. Well, bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.